This is CliffCentral.com.
Hey Dave, it's Ryan. Just got to the studio and no one is here. And I'm kind of freaking out because it's 9 o'clock and we need to start the Just Now Comedy podcast. There's a button here that says cross over to Dave Levinson and Martin Evans in Cape Town. But it says don't push. So I don't know exactly. I'm going to push it. You know what? Fuck it, I'm going to push it. 3, 2, 1.
So today is the 30th of November, and the podcast actually getting out a little bit. We've done one in Clarence, in fact, with the same person that we're recording with now. So now the Just Now Comedy podcast comes to you live from Cape Town on the roof of comedian Martin Evans' penthouse.
That sounds far more glamorous.
No, it's, and also does. We had some coffee, which you cooked on a pot, old school.
You know what? Okay, so yeah, just to give some context, we hear a lot of background noise out there. It's a lovely day, so we've got the doors open, and I'm on the 10th floor, so it's quite high up, but you've got all the cityscape sounds happening out
there. So what I would do now is, if you are listening, so we do have our regular listeners. We've got Cornelius, Michelle will be listening from the aquarium here in Cape Town, so we are in your area. We can almost smell the turtle shit from where we're sitting. And Martin's just lit up a nice little... Is that a special cigarette? Daddy's special cigarettes.
It's a cigarette in my house.
It's a house cigarette. House music.
House music.
So what I want people to do is maybe you can tick off how many sirens are here, because we're not in the greatest area of Cape Town. Where is this?
Dude, I will take that as the offense that it was meant with, okay? We're in Bree Street.
So in Joburg, what would this be, like Kensington, Bertram's?
If this was Joburg, it isn't in Joburg. That's the thing. This is Bree Street in Cape Town. Those of you know the city.
So you count, if you're listening, count the sirens.
Well, I'm not trying to make it sound better than it is, but I don't live in the fanciest place. I've just got a unique place, right? But outside where I am, the street is filled with some of the nicest bars and restaurants.
But not gentrified, hey? That's been there really.
No, it's a mix of everything. If you look, you've got Long Street, Loop Street, Bree Street, right around here, Batencraft. You've got the CBD in the city here right now. Some of it has been gentrified, some of it has been just upgraded, but the areas of gentrification are more seeming like out towards Woodstock and whatever.
Because there has been massive. Hey? I mean, I used to live in Zonnebloem, and I did a gig there last night at the Canterbury. You know, down there, it would be called Harrington Street. Mm-hmm. And I used to live there, and we couldn't sell that flat for, I think, in 1993, we couldn't sell that flat for 200,000 rand.
That's one of those things about Cape Town is, like, you know, obviously pretty much everywhere in the world knows it's a great city and it's been voted, you know.
Yes.
And the prices of property over the years have skyrocketed. I actually sold my place yesterday. Technically, I got the deposit through yesterday, right?
And that place was kind of... It's a small, I think it was a 40 square meter.
Well, I'm doing a joke about it at the moment where people say things like, oh, you know, there's a huge privilege that I've had to have this property, right? But it's 14 meters square. It's smaller than an RDP home.
I do remember I came to visit you there and I was like, I was in the lounge bedroom, kitchen,
look,
bedroom.
Look, at no point was this ever going to be anything other than that.
It was a spot.
It was an option that came up in a deceased estate.
And you kind of came up just when Airbnb was... coming up.
No, but it was never Airbnb. It was purchased. It was underneath the flat that my brother and I had, and we sold that flat. And then the older man who lived downstairs had not lived in the nicest of circumstances. And when he passed away, I managed to get it as a deceased estate. So I had this tiny thing maybe we can talk about this in a bit about finances as a sort of how do you.
I think there's two things that you've touched on there. Let's go do something completely weird. We're going to take a walk through Cape Town now, and we're going to take the microphone with us. So you're going to come with us on a little. I would say a Martin Evans-based comedy tour of Cape Town. Because you're speaking about things that people need to know about. Because so many people come from Joburg. They end up at Camps Bay, at whatever it's called.
Right.
There's so many other little places that I'm sure you know about. So let's tap your mind.
I've been to Johannesburg many, many times in my life. But if someone had to say to me right now, tell me where to go in Joburg, I'd be like, I feel like I really don't know. Like, things change, right?
So you're doing a little, let's get a little, let's call it a local tour.
People are very familiar with certain things. Like, when talks of a brand that hasn't existed for 15 years, and you go, oh my God, that's just so cemented in your head. Hey, yo, when's the Smirnoff Comedy Jam on?
Exactly.
It stopped I saw you.
See, some people say to me, they saw me in an ad they'll mention like 3 or 4 cellular providers, and you try and tell them, well, it was MWeb when the internet came out on dial-up. And then Rob Van Vieren was at the comedy club last night, and a guy came out and he said, this is my moment I've been waiting for. I'm meeting two guys that were in the MWeb ad, and it was Liam Bento. And Rob looked at me, he goes, fuck, I didn't remember that, because we were in the same ad, which was that Klimini Books.
Yeah.
And Liam took a photo of Rob Finfear and I and said, this is a magical moment, you guys have come together. And then I said to him, actually, at the time, they were one of the biggest advertising spenders. So Nick Rabinovitz is in one as well.
Yeah.
And they obviously saw the value in using comedians for their timing.
Well, look at the Castle Lager adverts. I mean,
Jason Goliath.
Goliath.
Committee, Alan Committee.
Me.
You.
Rob. Rob. Like, all the brands, basically. Yeah. Like,
and then the Oscar brothers, the Oscar Peterson and the other one?
Joe Barber.
They were in the Castle Lager, I think. Maybe not with the drinking.
But anyway.
So can I have a puff of that as well while I think? Yeah. So I think you picked up on two things. So we let's time our podcast. We're going to go for a walk down Cape Town streets. Sure, if you don't mind coming with us in podcast land, might be a bit noisy.
The reason why we're kind of going to do this is just to give you some extra context, and it comes back to where I am. I am in, if anyone doesn't know Cape Town, it is the smallest little CBD you can imagine, right? And everything, and I mean this in the nicest way possible. I can walk everywhere. And I cycle a lot, so I'm on my little bicycle everywhere, like some little hipster. You can judge me if you want, but I'm happy with it. Everything is within, honestly, like a square mile. And this is not a South Africa that many other people are aware of or familiar with. So if we leave my flat and we just do a, honestly, within
three blocks square,
okay. It's too much. We'll actually end up being too busy. In two blocks, I'll show you how many nights around here have a comedy night.
Okay,
in the
cool.
city.
And so let's see that as a bit of a mission.
And folks don't realize just how a culture of comedy exists in the city that's really, really strong. It doesn't necessarily mean it's great comedy. You know, people have to always understand you're right there.
I'm okay.
That's all right. You're in my flat. It's all legal to cough.
So you feel I'm in a safe place? Do you want a safe word?
My safe word. I have a safe word. It's fucking, there's my truncheon.
So, okay, let's go on a little tour, but that we're going to do. So look forward to that coming up in this hour. And then you also touched on something we spoke about outside on your roof there when you just showed me the view. Liz, did you talk about flats? I was talking about invoicing a comedy club. I was talking about invoicing a client. Mm. And then we kind of started speaking about the business of comedy. So a young comedian starting out, he's in his 20s, maybe living with his parents, her parents. These things aren't told. They're not said to you how to invoice. Paying tax. And let's go through your example, because you do a lot of TV ads.
So
you said you recently got a list, a sort of Excel document of ads that you had done.
Yeah.
And it kind of shocked you.
Well, I've done more work, legitimate, you know, everything is clocked and regularly posted off to SARS. Legitimate, proper work.
Because it's through an agency.
Because it's through an agency. Okay. And they handle an aspect of my sort of professionalism for income that I would never have done on my own.
Is that based on the cigarettes we're smoking now?
No, it's because I have competent, valuable agents who do these things.
Who's your agent? It's APM.
And I would
what does the APM stand for?
Artist Personal Management. And
Who's the lady there with personal? I'm assuming,
well,
I do know her.
Janet Duplessis is the sort of agency head owner.
Okay.
But
so shout out.
It's staffed out by the most fantastic series of women who really, really make what I do feasible. And if I didn't have them, this kind of goes back to this ignorance we have in an industry. It's all fine and well someone saying, listen, you're going to do a commercial. Am I? Great. Fantastic. How does this work? If you had to do the paperwork on a commercial, all right, cool, this is now showing in all the Scandinavian countries.
I've done it myself because I'm agentless, and I've had to go through a contract recently with Comedy Central. And it was daunting. It's something my brain doesn't fix because it doesn't make sense. Maybe I'm creative side, so we right-brained.
Mm. Well, I'll give you an example. I'm not able to talk about it because of the actual contract I was signing.
Yeah, yeah.
I can just tell you that I was signing a contract for this international project I was on. And my agents who have signing rights for me have already signed this, but now I have to initial every page, okay? This was 36
pages.
Okay, and I looked at it and I was just like, oh my god.
You haven't read it, you just initialed it.
Well, the thing is, the trust is there with my agents, right? And so there's that professional side of that I could never have handled. Trying to work out the percentage of usage on a commercial that's in various territories.
Different territories.
Different commercial
territories. So what's the first tip there for young... Because comedians are going to go to castings, and you're going to get these ads where they love your timing and they love your equity.
You've actually already jumped the gun. If you're getting to castings, the chances are you already have an agent.
I have an agent, okay.
So it's if you've got the agent... You're going to castings. It doesn't really work.
So comedians start getting into that, getting a film agent. They're not comedy agents. They don't deal with those gigs. Agents not going to get you a gig at Slug and Lettuce.
No, but I'll give you a better example of where it might affect someone like comedians more who aren't covered by agents. So like, you're a great upcoming comic and some brand recognizes it. Okay, and they go, you know what? We're going to make comedian X the face of a financial brand and say, we're going to use this. So that guy go, okay, geez, I've just been offered a huge... local ad campaign, and I don't have an agent. Now what do I do? Yes. Now, there's always going to be an agent you can go to who will take on the campaign.
The problem is there's these casting studios that are called Happy Faces or Big People. That's not who you need to go to.
No, you see, the problem people
those are those cattle call castings.
People don't understand is that the industry is made up of massive disparity between being an extra and being an actor. And
featured,
at the end of the day,
or even in between that, like you said, a featured extra.
If you want to go and have fun, like experience what it's like to be on a film set, and you have no objection to getting underpaid, poorly
you'll probably
treated,
watch some. I've seen them get 300 rand a day.
Look, it's more than that. I would say it's probably about 800 to 1,000 rand they're paying extra.
Text.
But you get no usage, right? And you sit and you have to repeat
the same
day. Actions the whole day. And it can be horrible. But those people are making no money. And they come from feature agencies, character castings. So it's like...
And there are, I'm not saying they're unemployed, but they are there in a point of their lives where they've got the time.
The people who go through extras, and I don't mean to be disparaging to all of them, you'll find retired folks.
Yes.
You'll find...
Very young, first-year students.
You'll find people who perhaps are not actually doing quite as well as you realize. You've got folks who are coming from pretty much extreme poverty who are actually there for the food.
I've had questions asked about my kid, so he's 9, and they've said, can he come to casting? I said, you know what, he'll come to a casting when he sees what it's about. I'm not going to be those parents who wants to push. When he starts going, actually, I'm into acting, I dig it, then he can go. For now, he's got a look that Jet or Ackerman wants a young kid to look like. And I've said, no. I can't go to the casting. It's a long day.
If I was a parent and I had the time that because of like the way this nature of the industry is, like I might be quiet, I might be busy, but a lot of my friends who are in the industry have children, and at times it can be awkward. They don't know what to do. They have to sometimes bring them along or whatever. But there are castings where they might bring their kids to it. Now, most of the actors' children tend to have pretty well-behaved.
Yeah.
Children who understand the industry and they don't get overwhelmed by the treatment. And then you get some people who just think that
they're going to want their kid to be in the nappy ad.
They spawned the most precious little beastie in the planet, and little so and so is just, oh my goodness. And you go, you've created a monster. And you see them run around.
See them
castings.
At the castings, yeah.
So
you kind of have that, what you said now is spot on. An ex actor or a current actor with a kid has that knowledge of, I've seen mom do this.
You see the difference is, if you've got like honestly like one of the most beautiful children in the world, and it has this little look that the world wants to say, listen, we want this to be the face of international cellular phone company. You go like, you know what, that is going to cover your kid's university. Yes, consider it. But if they want them to just be cheeky chap before in the back of an advert, it's like, you know what, you're actually building them up for the wrong
massive
kind
failure,
of
yeah.
like. The way that, this is something I always found ridiculous, if you work on a large project, and I say large project, almost any professional project, right? The way you get nannied on a set is embarrassing. Like, you know, here you are, you've made it 43 years in this world without, you know, what do you want to call it?
No.
Like having someone wipe your ass.
The young production company people that come there, they do treat you like a bit of a moron.
Like, sorry, sir, just going to stand over you with an umbrella. I'm like,
yes.
I can tell you what, give me the umbrella and I'll hold the umbrella.
No, he's been told,
you. You can go and do something else. You know, no, sir, I'm the umbrella man.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are you doing?
And also to come there to say, can I get you some water? And then you've really got water in your hand. I have that.
Can I take that water from you so you can get you
another
water?
It's not patronizing. It's more sort of...
So yeah, I don't think it's a healthy space.
Kids,
for children.
I don't think kids get treated well on set at all, because what happens is the director's job is to shout at people.
No, when you shout at your kid,
have you had cool directors?
I disagree. I've done so many projects.
You did a thing now with a kid.
I've done over 50 international commercials, and a great deal of them, I play the age role of being a dad in a commercial. And like, there's a handful of kids who've been pulled off set because they're unworkable. Right?
You said there was a kid that eventually just said no.
No, the director
stopped.
Camera
he
just
literally
moved
said,
to China. "He was a little brat." And they stopped the commercial, moved him on. You know what I mean? And they just
changed the actor,
changed the angle, got him out. You can go home, little boy.
Yeah.
We don't need you.
But surely they'd have picked it up in the cast.
So what I'm saying is, the attitude of the director with children is like, we were on set the other day. I can't talk about it. Anyway, so there's horses. There's horses, right?
Can't talk about the ad.
And
what
horse,
was the ad, Martin?
A horse can be trained, and they were amazing animals. But a horse, it's smart enough, right? That it's not its first time, it's not its fucking first rodeo. This knows exactly what it's doing.
That's
right?
Where that saying comes from.
So when you're on set and a director's gonna shout, okay, like, you know, fucking, are we ready? Camera rolling, action.
It was,
and
I think
horse,
I saw something on Instagram, you were dressed as a
horse,
sort of Civil War knot.
Yeah, I didn't talk about it.
Wasn't you.
But the horses react to camera action. They know what that is. It's like a dog getting ready for going for a walk. You know,
that's
that sense of hype. And you just go, you can't rely on all these people in the industry to react in the same way. Anyway,
the horse was doing better than the actors.
The horse was amazing.
Fantastic.
Anyway, we need to talk about finances.
So no, here's what you said, something else about two comedians we know, Mo Jack
and Robbie Collins.
Robbie Collins are in a, let's not even say the product name, but
they're in a
financial based how to.
Well, like your money management thing.
Okay, so the first thing, okay, I'm 48 now. I've only just recently started a company, comedy based company that pays me a salary, because someone said to me a long time ago, and here's the first thing, is that 32 page contract from the company's act was daunting. So that's why you don't do it.
Yeah.
It's the same as people saying you must buy shares. Like, no, I can't. I'll go through my broker. But they keep you out of these things for a reason.
Yeah.
Because it's valuable to you as a tax. So I've started a company where I get a salary from that company. I get more access to cell phone contracts, loans, car hire companies with that salary slip of nothing. It's a tiny salary. But it's changed the way I do business. Changed the way I invoice. It's changed everything. But no one's telling these young comedians, like, do this. No, because what if you tell them that and they're not company based minds, it's not gonna work, and then they come back to you and say, fuck that advice, it was stupid.
Well, I mean, if we're going back then to like how the finance things work, you know, so APM covers all that aspect for me, but nobody does the comedy side of things. So
how are you currently doing it? When you did a gig last night, so we get an invoice, it's a company, you invoice a person.
Well, over the years, and I haven't done much comedy, I've only just literally started again for the first time in about 2 years. I'm starting to gig again. And say, for example, we'll be doing Cape Town comedy. That means I'll be invoicing, right? And then I'm going to have that come into my account. And
so how do you just have a Word document with your name and your...
Well,
they want your tax number.
I've got invoicing software, and I use...
What do you use?
I've got...
Sage.
Tax. No, I don't actually. I use a free app that I'm very happy with.
Because Little
it
Invoice.
Because it allows me to put on like 50 clients. And at the end of the year, I probably only have about... 10 or so that I really need to add specifically at this
50
stage.
Per year or 50 per app?
I've never reached any issue with it, so I'm not too sure. But, you know, like, I'll send out my invoice for that, and that's one thing. But, like you were saying, my financial position recently shouldn't be in the position it's in, because, you know, there's my little flat that I own outright.
Yeah.
But because of the nature of my employment, I have no ability to remortgage it, because I haven't managed myself as a business that the banks go, okay, cool, well, whatever income you made last year, if I'd paid it out as a small salary monthly, that the credit access that I would receive. So it put me in a position where even though I owned this little property outright, the risk of losing it because I didn't have access to credit that was basically existing, other than selling.
If you had a small company registered, do you think the banks would have treated you differently?
Well, if I'd had the ability, say for example, if I'd just been a normal salaried man, and I would go, you know what I'm going to do? I want to do some improvements to my flat, and I'm going to go take a little remortgage on it, and then, you know, spend 100 grand or whatever it was on the flat and have access to the funds. That was all I wanted to do.
Okay, and you couldn't.
And I couldn't. But then it was also that thing of like, well, actually, you know, I haven't worked a lot recently, and finances have been tight. This has been a really tough period for like
tough
about
year
a
or
year
tough?
And a bit. A year and a bit of, I went from doing 10 international commercials over the drought, dropping to one renewal and one commercial.
Okay.
It was a massive, massive dent to my income. And because I don't want to rely on stand-up, this was an unprecedented and unexpected level in drop.
I don't think people realize. I mean, you know, I'm talking to you, Martin Evans. Someone said, well, does he do comedy? Who is he? Who is he? I think they don't realize how massive you are. If you went to Belgium or if you went to Italy, you're selling bread in Italy. You're selling exhaust pipes in Belgium. Finland, I think you've done some crazy stuff. Because Cape Town's a very big film-based...
Well, I mean, again, not a question of... I've never felt this is a thing to be sort of proud of.
Yeah.
But I've been in a lot of commercials that have shown, frankly, every territory in the world. Like, huge brands that I've been in the face of worldwide.
Didn't you get a phone call for someone they were watching the Super Bowl or something?
I've been in 3 Super Bowl commercials. Okay, seriously. Like, I was the face of PayPal worldwide.
So, Kanye West was singing at the halftime show, and there you were.
Yeah, like so. Like, but what the thing is, like, so I've got no issue with what those represent. Those represent a payment for jobs. They were quite good fun. I enjoy doing them. I don't at any point go, you might know me from a PayPal advert. Like, that would just be pure wank, right? But it does bring up something kind of strange when I realize, because I've done loads of commercials in the UK. So I go back to the UK and you get on the tube and someone's sitting across from you and they don't go, like, hello, I've seen you on TV before. They
just
go,
look at you weirdly.
Were we in high school together or something? Do you know what I mean? And they like smile at you. And then I get awkward because I've been smoking strong weed. And it's like,
maybe I was in high school with this guy.
Possibly, yeah.
Anyway, so what are we going to do?
We're going to spoke about the finances. So I would like, I do want to do, we did a program already, but just in terms of insurance for comedian, because we don't have a steady income. So the guy said, no, there is an insurance package for that where sporadic payments are split over the years. So in other words, you have 6 payments and they're split through the year. So if you miss one, you still got 5, but you've got 2 months to pay it.
Right.
So it was a 6 months, and that's life insurance. That's when you die. But the other ones were medical aids and just general savings. And what you said now, massive income from for a while, and then the drought came and you got 2 gigs.
Mm.
But what the banks want is steady income. So if you had split that over 12 months, the banks would have loved you. I mean, what do you need?
As I'm saying, if I had basically redone all my financially sort of considered stuff better,
yeah.
Initially when I'd started.
Who do you get advice from?
No one.
And you're an internet guy, so you obviously go to, but the thing is that European based, every YouTube thing I see, the first thing it starts with, like, are you in debt? What we'd like to do is help you get out of debt. Take your salary, and I want you to take the thing, and how much coffee do you have? And the first sentence was, take your salary. So there's no, we don't get one. You know, if you've got a regular TV show or something, that's quite lekker. You know, if you're on Seven Delano, or if you're, you know, let's look at someone like Skulk. He's based himself into movies, so he's going to get a royalty fee from that film if it does happen, if he set up a contract. And then he's got his acting that he's doing, and then he does commercials, and he does straight stand-up, and he's got his own show. So there's multiple streams of income.
Mm.
So that's where I would say to a young comic, start looking at these things. I spoke to Kate Pinchuk, and I said, your comedy is well thought out in the way you think it. Why aren't you writing for Femina or for Fair Lady or these places and doing these little back page stories? You know that last page in the mag, A Life Is Like That or whatever?
Mm.
They pay $2,000 or $3,000 for those things. That's where you should be going, as a little other source. But let's not talk about that. I just want to phone Rabin.
Right.
And I'm just going to hold it up to there so he'll be able to speak. It should be fine.
Yeah.
So he's started this weird idea where he saw an empty shop at a mall.
Yeah.
And he went to the mall management and said, who's going to take the shop? And I said, nobody. He said, well, can you offer me a small rental? And then I will put up an idea. So he sent them a proposal and he got it. So I find exactly what he did into his thing there.
George Michael Fan Club, good afternoon.
I saw a thing on Danny Boyle. Was it Danny Boyle? Roy, who's your guy? And he said this way. Okay.
The microphone's the other way around, so the speaker's coming out there.
Oh, okay, cool. We'll just do it there. Yeah. Rabin, say some words.
Say some words.
Okay, they had this George Michael driving video where he said, take the circle now, indicate, and wank. Okay, so I did an intro now with I'm talking to Martin Evans on the podcast. We said that you've started this weird idea, and that's you, basically. That is, I think your name is Rabin Weird Idea Hardooth.
Yeah, Weird Idea No Money Hard Guy. That's me.
Or I call you Ryan's brother. So now,
that hurt.
So now what you've got now is a kind of, it is an idea, because you went to a shopping center. Tell us how it went. You gave them a proposal.
Yeah, so everybody walks around shopping centers. There's always empty stores that are boarded up and stuff. And I always look in there and I go, hey man, this could be like this. You could put 400 chairs in here and sell the tickets and do a comedy show.
Okay, cool. So what was your next move?
So there was a local mall there where I stayed, Mall of the South, in the south of Johannesburg. And I saw this big store next to the Checkers, and I looked inside and I was like, wow, yeah, I could put 400 or 500 chairs in here. And then I proposed to them. I sat with them and I said, look, this is what I'm going to do.
On your knees, like a proper proposal.
No, I probably had a feasibility spreadsheet. I had mock-up posters. I already got availabilities of comedians. I think it was yourself, Chris, Dylan Oliphant. Like, you know, it was like a lineup of 4 comics to do just one Saturday night in August, you know. So I gave myself like 2 months to sell that 400 tickets, and I proposed to them. They were like, they love it, there's no entertainment in the mall, they think it's a good idea. But unfortunately, that premises is already, there's a lease agreement in place and someone's moving in, but they have this other smaller premises which they could possibly come to some sort of arrangement with me where I could have it for a couple of weeks or like 2 months basically, and then try a pop-up concept.
The cool thing is, as an entrepreneur, you have no fear in asking, because the biggest fear is someone saying no.
100%. And so many of the things that I did, I just asked the question.
Hmm.
Even at the Clarence Comedy Festival, I went to Clarence with my wife on holiday and I said, hey man, this reminds me of Edinburgh.
Hmm.
Wonder if we can do the thing here. And then I asked the lady, I said, who runs the town? You know, I was like, do you have a mayor or do you have a sheriff?
There's like they just said, you just go, there's a lesbian on a hill with a loud hailer that runs the town.
Exactly. They said, no, there's a tourism forum and this lady's in charge. Okay. So speak to her.
Cool.
So I spoke to her and she was like, hey, speak to these people. They'd be keen. And then that's how it kind
of So that's interesting because we're not talking business today, but we were talking about starting companies and things. Martin and I were talking about how the entrepreneur isn't, there's nothing central about it. And they don't look after you. So you're just doing stuff. So now you're in the company, they accepted your proposal, and now you start this comedy club. What's it called?
It's called the Comedy Club.
It's called the
why? I tell you why. I know, and people ask why. Because I wanted to call it like, you know, everybody has their name attached to it or something, and I thought that's cool. And you know,
okay, so you're talking about like the Goliath, Parker's, Cape Town Comedy Club.
The thing I wanted, the initial one was Hardy Ha-Ha's.
Because of the Hardy Dog.
You know, because of the Hardy's surname and Ha-Ha and whatever.
And not the Hardy Dog, not the bird.
It just looked silly. And then I remember listening to a radio interview or something with a marketing guy, and he was like, hard sounding K and K and C sounds work well in people's minds. Things like Kodak, yes. Coca-Cola, Krispy Kreme, all of these things people remember.
Cool.
So I was like, so instead of trying to do the Comedy Warehouse shop store thing or whatever, because I thought the comedy shop was cool, but then I just went the comedy club.
It's not, you know what's nice? It's the talking points, it's an entrance, it's a breaking the ice, it's funny.
Cool. And it's not completely attractive. I'm not calling it the the jokey joke factory.
Yeah, I've already forgotten what it's called.
Martin and I have been. We also.
Can I order 16 jokes, please?
We also went. Yeah, exactly. If you go to, if you'd call it the comedy tuck shop, people come there and they want that. So what we've done is Martin and I have tested some home based cigarettes for the podcast just to see if it makes any difference. I can hear sirens. Okay, so now when is your club opening and who's on?
So I'm building it still. It's the first.
That's the other thing. You are building it yourself by you painting the walls.
That's the thing, because part of the thing is like I didn't have any money, but I wanted to build this comedy club. So I went to a hardware supplier called Leroy Merlin.
Yeah.
And I said, I've got this idea, and I will tweet and Facebook and Instagram, because obviously, you know, companies see value in that where other people don't. And
so can't they sponsor our podcast as well if they've got money? Ask them to sponsor the podcast.
Correct. So I came to them and they said, okay, cool, what do you think it's going to cost? And I did a quick little cost breakdown, and it's so many pieces of wood, I need so many liters of paint, I need these kind of light fittings and some cabling and cable ties and all that kind of crap. Globes and bulbs.
How far are you?
And then, I'm about, so the flooring is 90% done, the walls are 60% done, electrics are 100% done. Okay. I've picked up all the timber now. I'm here in the hardware store now, picking up the timber, which is already pre-cut. So I've just got to build the stage. I've got to zing and screw the stage together and put together my little reception.
Up till when? What's your deadline? When's your first show?
Oh, my first show is this Saturday. Saturday the 1st of December.
1st of December. You're taking on the Global Citizens, Jay-Z, Beyonce's in town, and you're doing a comedy show at the Comedy Comedies.
If they want to come do a spot, they can. I know Jay-Z. I have a lineup. But I could squeeze them. I mean, I could. Yeah. I'm not saying.
I think Ed Sheeran, you know, maybe you, might be able to
come,
put a.
If you come, you might have to go. You know, I can't put you on before after Mel Miller, but you can definitely open for him.
Okay, so Beyonce is opening for Mel Miller at your comedy club Saturday the 1st. So who's on your lineup?
It's Mel Miller. It's Ronnie Modimola. Warren Robertson and Mo Motebe.
That's a fantastic lineup.
That's a great lineup to
okay,
go.
Okay, cool. So the Comedy on. Comedy Club at the Mall of the South, what time?
It's Mall of the South, upper level, next to the Rockamamas at 8 p.m. Tickets are on sale now on
Have you got a special price if I buy 10 or if I book online? What's the story?
No, so I've got early bird, so you get $20 off. So if you come to the door, it's $140, but if you buy any time from now until Saturday, it's $120.
$120 a ticket. Okay, cool. Well, I'm on the lineup, I think, on the 5th of December, which may be the next week.
You're doing two shows. So
15th,
two
sorry.
Shows in a row.
Oh, really?
Yes, you're doing 14 and 15.
Okay, cool. Well, then we're not allowed to interview people for more than 12 minutes.
Okay,
cool. Not because you're not interesting, but thank you for that. That's cool. It's always nice to know. That's
go to comedycomedy.co.za. That's where you can get
You registered a website as well. Comedy Comedy.
Yeah, that's why I buy the ticket. I've even got my own ticketing software. So it's not comedy.
Rabin, I don't know why you aren't a massive billionaire, because you've got all the stuff. You just need someone to believe in you.
True.
Well, have you tried...
listening to this podcast, I have ideas. You got the funding. Let's do this.
Okay, the Comedy Comedy Club will go on to comedycomedy.co.za. Well, because Martin and I are actually going for a walk now around Long Street with the podcast. We're going to take a speaker with me. We're going to go find comedy clubs.
Fantastic. I love what you guys are doing as well. And every time I've had to work with you guys, I was mad impressed with your professionality.
Thank you, man.
Especially when you're sober.
We do professionalize.
You're a bit tricky. Okay.
Cheers, Rabin.
Cheers, guys. Cheers, Martin.
Cheers, cheers. Bye-bye.
Okay, so, Martin, we're gonna not take a break, but for the people that don't know this, we're going to get ready now to go take a walk through Cape Town.
Yeah, I'm just going to put some shoes on because I don't want to get too burgers.
You're wearing Stokies.
Yeah,
we should
put shoes on.
Okay. No, I've got to put some shoes on. Stokies.
Even.
Martin Evans is wearing Stokies, which is like the first Crocs. Okay.
These are my fucking penthouse pantoffels. These are fancy.
All right, so if you want to come with us, we're going for a walk through Cape Town.
No,
that's the end of part one.
Maybe get a snack.
Please.
What do you want to eat?
I'm so hungry.
Okay, so
where was the first place that started? We mentioned Cafe Roo.
Well, we've just walked past Cafe Roo. We're in Short Market Street on the corner of Long. Cafe Roo is probably one of the premier venues.
Are they related to the one in Kumiki?
They are, same people. Okay. I'll be performing there with Rumpin Fear, and we're taking Pants on Fire there.
Pants on Fire was your like sketch.
It's a variety show. So we're going to get the best musicians.
And then you interview them, you play games with them.
A bit of everything. So it's probably the only show that's ever encouraged like heckling, if anything. Okay. We want that audience interaction. We're a noisy show.
And you're going to get that database. Is it a bit of a sort of the most amazing show kind of database as well?
Not really. It's a bit of a mix of what Cafe Roo's got and Rob's Market. And frankly, the fact that I don't perform much, market for telling.
Where are we on our way to the next place? So Cafe Roo, you said, is it good service, good fee? Well, how much do they pay?
Actually, one of my favorite spots for watching decent musicians at an intimate venue. It's about 120 capacity.
Okay, so they worked out the acoustics, they've got good bar prices, and
because they mostly have musicians there, it's got a set stage and lighting that it really looks good for performing artists. So a good space for comedy. But not the kind of space you'll see your average open spot at. So that's your headlines. Barry Hilton's.
Well, that's important. So let's talk about those things. We'll get where is the next club? I want to know the price.
See,
is it suited for comedy? Is there food?
Maybe this is
and
the
what
issue,
comedians am I going to see?
A lot of folks think that the City Ball here in Long Street and what surrounds us is like, you have to put gigs on here. But there's a lot of transient folks here. So who lives in the city who goes out here versus who's here today and will they be back tomorrow? So if you're like a German kid on a backpacking holiday, do you know this comedy?
Yes, not.
You know, or are you somebody who lives in Frederhoek or Tamboerskloof and goes, hey, of course I know about it. Probably not too. No, we're just passing Tiger's Milk now.
Okay.
This is on Long Street, in the corner of Hout.
Okay.
Excuse me. And this is it's one of the, I wouldn't call it like franchise style, but there's multiples of
them. Yes, they've taken over like a conglomerate.
It's like a kind of Rocco Mamas-y vibe.
La Parada has also got it in Waterfront. Yeah. So now, what is this comedy venue?
This is an occasional comedy venue.
It seems very weird. It seems like a bar and pillars.
It's a poster up. It is. It's you know, not every venue works for an event just because they want to have it at. But I'm trying to see if there's a poster around.
Sorry about that, really bus. Loud. No, one of your. Have you ever been on a party bus?
I have, it's a horrible experience.
Did you do comedy on one?
Kurt Langefeld used to be the guy for the party bus. That was his job. He said it was the worst.
Oh, did he MC the party buses? Like, with those drunk bachelorettes?
No.
So anyway, I'm sure they do the comedy at this one.
This
or not?
Is it. This is the venue. But it's part of it and swings around. So this is more of an terrible open spot evening.
Okay.
That's not hard venue to play.
I don't mind the guys that are enthusiastic about comedy, but if you look at the venue and there's...
Well, let's go back up this way. We're going to go up Hart Street because we're going to walk past another venue, which is now quite on the fancy end of the market. So Cafe Roo is, I think, let's say in the region of about 120, 150 a ticket.
Okay.
But if you wanted dinner and drinks, that's, you know, that's on your own bill. With a venue in the corner here, it's called Gate 69. We're just walking up.
What's
past
it called?
Gate 69.
Oh, okay. Is that Gate 69. Where they also do a lot of the drag shows?
Yeah, it's primarily
like
a
so it's
LGBT
kind of based on the same as on Broadway used to be.
Essentially, but anything more focused.
LGBT. And S.
What's the S for?
I'm not sure. I think it was. There's a whole different. The words just getting longer and longer.
Yeah. So well, this venue primarily has a lot of the drag shows and the Trolley Dollies.
And isn't it also run by one of the Cathay specific?
Cathay specific. The Trolley Dollies, I think, is the name.
But he actually owns shares in it. The Brendan, the guy.
Quite possibly. But anyway, they're open on an occasion, and the way they run their tickets is a bit different because what they do is you have sort of a set meal and a kind of cabaret dinnery thing. So it's expensive, but I guess you're having quite a lot, like 450 rand a ticket or so.
Is that what it is?
So as we walk up here now, we're crossing over Loop Street up Hout.
You know, there's a bunch of venues around here that have tried things at various stages.
What do you think is the reason for that? Is every club owner gone, well, what's the big thing at the moment? What's the rock and roll? So 10 years ago, it was hiring Foko Felicica. So now, is a comedian on that level?
Well, I would have said, if I had a venue, if I was a business owner and I ran a restaurant or something and someone said, you know, oh, you have a comedy night, why is that? I said, well, you know, at 7 nights a week, you want to be open. You have to have some hook and entertainment angle sometimes. And dare I say, it's a really cheap way of possibly bringing people into your venue. Or not.
Yeah.
A lot of folks end up relying on comedy to make a business that's already dead better. Exactly. And then you can't suddenly what have an amazing gig.
All of a sudden, the comedy night becomes one of their busiest nights. They end up putting on more staff, ordering more stock, not realizing how good cool it was going to be. And then you say, well, can't you support us?
So here we are passing Gate 69 now. And this is a successful venue, you know.
When it says Three Little Pigs, is that Rob Van Vuren's
No, that's a cabaret show.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So we're going to turn left now. We're back on Bree Street, just across from where I live. And this is where I was performing last night. There's a venue here, Burger and Lobster.
So that, hang on, let's just count how many we've done here now. We've done four.
That's three we've done so far. Cafe
Roo. Well, K69, Cafe Roo, and Tiger's Milk. And now this one, Lobster, and Burger and Lobster.
Is another venue that, that was last night, was used. It's only been used a couple of times so far, but feasibly a better room for comedy than, you know,
so
Tiger's Milk.
So do these people rely on their own, if they're a restaurant, do they rely on their own database to get people in?
Well, last night, for example, was a evening that was sponsored by Duis Whiskey. So Duis database, the venue's database, and they came again for like a set meal kind of option.
Okay, so they were paying. I find the dirt model works better.
Well, again,
because then you guarantee the comedians are going to get paid.
You know, exactly. So we got paid cash at the end of the night, and we got a lovely meal
for
takeaway.
Like, you know, it seems like we're always hopping on the same thing. I want a promoter to understand. I'm a professional comedian, so I'd like to. I don't care what the fee is. I'm not worried about the fee, but you did say a certain number in my WhatsApp.
Yeah.
So just give me that number that you WhatsApp me.
Yeah.
I've decided that I want to do the gig. Don't say, yo, but Dave, you like a, don't you do top corporate, whatever? Why would you do a gig for $500? Well, because I want to pay for my kids' tuck shop.
So like money. Here we are now, and if I was, I timed it last night, and I did an Instagram story from here to my house, and it was a 57-second video.
Really? From here to your house?
From my place to the venue where I got.
Okay, it's a nice straight venue. There's no pillars in the way, and you obviously performed at the end.
We played down on the bottom, and you know, a couple of tweaks, and it would have been really no problem.
And a good night. Who was on?
Martin Davis, myself, and Paul Snodgrass.
Okay, cool. So let's call it the fourth venue, and we haven't even walked, I don't think, a full block yet.
No, basically what we kind of have done is a loop on...
This is a place that's selling much for lunch. I called it Angolan, but...
This one here?
Yeah.
This is terrible.
What's it called?
This is La Parada. This is like, I imagine this is what like old people who used to go to Caprice kind of go here now. This is my vibe. There's nothing wrong with it. Their drinks are expensive. Their food is expensive. It's got a nice spot on the street, but it's not my vibe.
Okay, let's move on.
Not my
What's
vibe.
Up there? Okay, that looks like...
So there we've got...
Have you seen in Joburg that a few of the guys, so...
Well, this is really...
They've taken a barbershop and they've taken over a comedy night. So it's in Parkhurst and there's about four comics and some open micers have joined there. But normally there's only about 12 people in the barbershop.
Yeah.
So they've turned it into a comedy night. And what they've done is they've realized that social media doesn't know anything about comedy.
Yeah.
So if you take a photo of 12 people and you go rocking show, there could have been 60 people sitting behind them. But so with the social media, they go come down to the show. So what I'm thinking is there's a massive split in the entertainment value for the punter.
Yeah.
If I went to that barbershop and I paid $150 and four comedians came and spoke about their shoelaces, I'd be like, hang on a minute, I'm getting ripped off here.
Yeah.
But they're not selling it as that. They're selling it as a creative space for
a
comedians to come and jam.
A bespoke event.
That's
See,
it.
Now I'm moving
inside
back.
The barbershop. Yeah. So there's people having their hair cut.
I'm moving back to London shortly and excuse me. One of the advantages of having had an industry that's existed for so long is that for every regular straight up comedian stand up comedy night in a bar, pub, restaurant, wherever you want to put it, there's always these variations on the show. So, you know, somebody wants to try comedy in a laundromat, somebody wants to do. And
you normally find it's quite an eccentric producer dude who used to either be an actor or always a comedian.
But when you bring it down to a like, okay, hang on a minute, this is on my block. Yeah. I live in this community and I'm performing in the laundromat. I love that. That I'm keen on. That I don't have an issue with. It's it's not hard work to do the comedy industry here in Cape Town. So now we're getting up to the corner.
So what street are we walking down?
This is Whale and Bree Street corner we're on at the moment.
So what I think we should do is let's get a little map that we'll send into the Facebook.
Well, we'll make that the. I'll put a little link up in the thumbnail.
So let's talk four. But let's talk ones we're not going to make it to. What else is there in Cape Town?
Okay, so if we carry it on Bree Street right now. I'm just going to stop for a second. I'll just
the orphanage.
If we carry it on to Bree Street, there is on the road here now another place called Station on Bree, about a block and a half up, Station on Bree. Then there's Orphanage,
which is
also running. We come back on the other side of the road. I think it was one of the salad venues that's running an occasional gig, like a vegan venue.
Yes.
A little bit further down.
Do they expect the comics to be in on the game?
Well, you know, it's like if you go do an LGBT night, you need you to Muslim, not be homophobic. Like, why would you go and do a vegan comedy night and be like...
meat.
Slapping meat in the faces of people, that would be a bit of a nonsense move. But I don't think there's anything. Like, I mean,
if that's in your comedy set, then leave it.
Mm. So around here, again, if we go back onto Long Street, there's Sergeant Pepper's and there's the Beer House. There's umpteen spaces around here that you can go and do a gig at. And you know what? Sometimes you look around and you go, there's even better spaces that haven't been used. So like. All the energy that goes into running a venue that might be like really shit.
Yes, bad lighting.
There's another one to the left of us called Nomad, but that's got a bad reputation.
These venues, what's it called, Nomad?
You know, nobody wants to work with a guy based.
So, but what is his premise? What is he? Is he a producer?
I think he's the venue owner, and he's arrogant about how he sees comedians performing at his venue.
See. So he doesn't really respect the art form.
You don't understand it, respect it, so you don't get it.
So what do you think? What do the comedians want from a phone call?
Well, if I was to like observe the industry at the moment, and being in it now for 14 years and old and jaded and all this kind of stuff, I don't look at it in the same way with the hope and aspirations of some of the younger guys. When I say hope and aspirations, it's almost like they've held it up to this mythical, magical status. And perhaps we're gonna go left here. We're walking down Loop Street now, but
we'll be onto 8 clubs.
Yeah. If you look at something like these guys, they just love it so much. Every day they talk about it on their social media, about the buzz they get just from being on a stage. And these smaller venues fulfill this need. It doesn't in all truth show that the city's got a real growing comedy industry. It shows that there's a culture of comedy. But it's not necessarily.
So you mentioned something now. So you reckon that a lot of people are considering stand-up comedy just to have the balls to be on stage.
Well, we're now passing House of H and upstairs. They had on their roof venue. This is an amazing spot. We should maybe come here for some lunch. It's like brisket style, you know, like your American barbecue kind of thing.
Okay.
It's an option.
Is that where you choose your menu and you sort of add your food as you go on a way?
I believe so, that's right. Yeah. There's options, Check a van, it looks just like my old VW.
And I bet you it doesn't work either.
Probably doesn't.
Okay, we've got 3 minutes left.
So we're making our way back to House of Machines where we started off and got our coffee, but...
But I think the whole scale of it, I think with the whole idea of what you're talking about, is that there's... 11 to 12 places purely for comedy.
Yep.
Now, obviously, on the other nights, there's bands and shit, but.
And no, we're not including.
We didn't even walk 4 blocks.
We're not including within another 1 kilometer range Cape Town Comedy Club, which has been open 5 years. We've got Fireman's, which is a regular monthly gig as well.
I think we'll list this in the podcast just in terms of we're not advertising any product, but just to tell people how can you say you're a comedian? What other job do you do? When you've got 10 clubs you can work in, within 2 weeks you can make yourself a fairly decent living.
No, you can't.
Not? No. You're living with your mom, young comic.
No, none of these gigs pay anything more than go out of the house money. They
really?
Are certainly not pay for your rent money gigs. The majority of the open spot gigs are literally open spot gigs.
You're
so
getting paid, you make a burger and a beer.
300 Rand or so to pass on. Really small money for feasible acts. As a pro series of gigs, no, you can't make enough to cover your rent. If you just relied on that, I wouldn't say so. Not for
new
acts, no
more. Are you keen to organize gigs? Would you always pay your open mic or something?
Well, no. Yes and no. I've got my own PA system and lights and everything, and I have been assisting with the running of gigs. What I prefer doing now is just giving some guys some advice and tips, which is often all that's needed. Like saying, hey, make sure you got that thing. And then this is a lovely spot, Pokeball. Maybe we can come back here and have some lunch. It's very clean and healthy. No, I don't want to necessarily run the gigs. I don't believe that the culture of comedy is effectively being put forward in the right way. So that, you know, aspiring acts should be able to earn money soon.
Yes.
Doesn't mean just because you're a great new act that you're a fucking hero legend and need money straight away. Like, You gotta want it.
Do your time, man.
Do your time. Be prepared to show up. And I see it a lot with really good comics in this country who are well respected, who will show up at any opportunity to go on stage because they just love it.
You'll often find Skulk, Loyiso Gola, always at the clubs. He's always there. And you know what? He goes up there and he says to the audience straight up, listen, I'm trying something new. See if we do it. Are we done or not?
Yeah, one more. We could carry on and I can show you more, but like, literally,
thank people for sticking with us for this long. But I think if you do come to Cape Town, if you tell people about the podcast, you've got incredible large amount of, and these things are advertised, they're on social media.
Yeah, and like, I just said, a lot of them might be open spot nights, but because of the culture of comedy,
the guys will show up
to do it. If someone's in town, you'll see them jump on in OBS and come down to town.
You never know who you're going
to
see.
Yeah, and we didn't get a chance to talk about the Village Idiot as well. There's a lot. But anyway, I think
when you said Village Idiot, I really thought you meant Paul Snodgrass.
No, he's over there. We can go have a chat to him now. We don't know.
All right, thanks, Martin. We took a little trip around town. So just in closing, what clubs did we see? I counted 8.
Well, I'm going to try to do this in my head. We've got Nomad. We've got Gate 69. We've got Burger and Lobster. We've got Station on Bree. We've got Orphanage. We have Tiger's Milk. We also have, what else did we mention? We've got Cafe Rue. Around the corner, there's the Fireman's Arms. That's about a block away to the left. And then there's Cape Town Comedy, just at the waterfront, a kilometre away.
Has anyone else ever expressed the shock? Not the shock, at how many there are. Or do people just not know? Do they sort of think, well, comedy's at this one place?
Well, you know, there's a lot of new acts who are making up the comedy fraternity. So their energy's fresh. So they're not maybe looking on what happened in the past and going, wow, there's a lot more nights than there used to be. But if you look at the social media diaries, if that's what you're going to call it, of the acts, they're out there regularly performing. And if they're not performing in the City Ball, they're somewhere else in the city. There's a lot of other gigs happening and around the greater Cape Town area.
And then we're coming up to that end of the year thing. Like, for instance, I mean, Kurt and myself did a weird corporate at a, like, an old, it looked like a strip club, but I think it was a boxing club. It was the old Assembly. Do you remember that, where that was?
Oh yeah, the one out in Harrington Street. Yeah.
So that's now a venue. But it's coming up to end of the year thing. Any plans for your stuff or corporates or things? What are you doing?
Well, I've been working towards getting more and more roles in television and film, and I've had a really fortunate season so far, so I'm going to continue doing that. I'm doing Cape Town Comedy next week. I'm emceeing it, but I'm there from Wednesday to Sunday, but unfortunately my shooting schedule hasn't been released, so that kind of, I've got to go work that out and work around it. And then I'm doing Pants on Fire with Rob in the new year, which is going to be great fun because we haven't done that since the National Arts Festival. And
that includes like a bit of an improv.
Well, it's
angle.
This is going to be a little bit more structured because both Rob and I aren't drinking at the moment, right? And we're a little older, a little wiser. And we always encourage an audience involvement. So it's going to have some aspect where it's improvised because we don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, we're standing on the roof at the moment in case anyone's wondering.
So we just sort of, okay, so that's the one thing we didn't speak about was, okay, it's festive season. I just wish everyone has a season, and that's including clients. I want clients to be happy with the comic they've chosen. If he's an MC or she's an MC, whatever they're doing, just be happy with the choices. There's so many more choices, and obviously with more choices comes all the bullshit as well, because it's, people are sometimes chosen on their social media exposure rather than their talent. But I just, yeah, I hope for a really cool season for all the comics.
Yeah, I mean, if I get into that as well, I'm not looking personally to book much corporate work, and when somebody does come to me with a feasible booking, I normally suggest the person I think is right for it. So maybe the bookers out there, if you're listening, consider a larger range of comics. And I don't mean to say that you need to underpay, but you'll pay less and you'll expose more, and you're putting more turkey on the Christmas tables for more people.
So yeah, maybe think of doing an MC plus two acts for your gig, and then you're sort of helping new comics as well. So then the other thing was, I drove here from Joburg and the drive seemed quick, like a couple of hours, because of the podcast I was listening to. So on Cliff Central, the one was the Renegade Report. It gets quite serious, but there's an underlying irony, and they're actually very funny, cynical guys who are talking heavy politics and heavy structural things in the country, and anything from, you know, they talk about fiscal challenges plus racial issues and things, and that's with Jonathan Witt and Roman Abramovich. I can't remember his name.
Kabanak, is it? Roman Kabanak?
Roman Kabanak.
I know him from Twitter.
Roman Kabanak.
I've never heard the podcast.
But just, I do suggest people to listen to that, because it's coming up to holidays, and it is, if you are driving long distances, podcasts kind of keep you awake because your senses are heightened. The other one was Alec Baldwin. Here's the thing. He had such a brilliant interview, which you would think it wouldn't be interesting, but this woman wrote a book. She was an editor at one of the big magazines, and she wrote a book on a fire that burnt a library down in Los Angeles in 1986. 1986. So it seems like a nothing. And yet for 2 hours they talk about the fact that when a library was burnt down, there were 4 million pieces of literature in there that are no longer there because they didn't have digital. It was 86. Yeah. So just an interesting podcast with Here's the Thing. And then the other one is also a guy called Dan Carlin. It's called Wake Up Call or something. I don't know.
You look for that. I've been listening to not so much actually podcasts recently, it's actually going on to audiobooks per se. And
you download Audible?
I have had Audible in the past. I've had multiple, like a bunch of free books. I say free books, I end up paying through the nose. Forget you have a subscription there, and they remind you on a monthly basis. But I've got a lot of audiobooks that have been saved off in other drives and stuff as well. Ooh, the wind's picking up.
Wind's picking up. So it's Common Sense by Dan Carlin. For now, wish you good holidays. We have got one more podcast coming up at the end of next week, and then we've got some bikers that are traveling around the country, female bikers coming on the show. So thanks for listening. I want to say goodbye for Eric, Richelieu, and Ryan.
What are you doing?
I haven't got many gigs, so I'm in Cape Town now doing this week, and then I'll finish on Sunday.
But you're at the beer.
My beer fest was more for the magazine that I design and just to drink beer.
Right.
But I'm not doing any comedy there. I think next year I would definitely speak to, especially with this here, there's money to be made. If that was sponsored by Duos and that's sponsored by them, at the beer festival there should be a comedy tent and we speak to these guys and they start playing a role.
Yeah, well, I mean, I look forward to coming down to the beer fest thing, but for somebody who's on 42 days of not drinking, it's going to be mostly like actually sniffing things and spitting out like an adult. Anyway.
I believe that sniffing things and spitting out is like an entry into adulthood
and other things,
and that's what I'm going to say. Like, be careful what you spit out and be careful what you sniff. That's good advice. But thanks for listening to the Just Now podcast. My name's Dave Levinson. Who are you?
I'm Martin Evans. Thanks guys, it's been fun.
Cheers, bye.
This is CliffCentral.com.